The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Mr. Darian Narain, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Happy to be here. Very, very happy to be here. Good morning to the entire of Trinidad and Tobago as well. I know the back-to-school traffic have people up and running. So good morning once again to you, and good morning to everybody across Trinidad and Tobago at this moment.
So I did ask, you know, very cheekily, I said, were you part of the back to school rush this morning? And you told me with a big smile on your face, no, I was in, I'm in Woodbrook from Port of Spain.
I'm not from Port of Spain, but I live in Port of Spain.
You live in Port of Spain.
But I represent very much so the Sawa Massive, so Sawa people, you know.
Nice. So how did you get involved with the Heroes Foundation?
So I've been working in youth development spaces for quite some time, almost 12 years now. Mm-hmm. And I've worked in different iterations across the board, both nationally and internationally. So the Heroes Foundation popped up across my life a couple of years ago when I was doing some work with them with another agency and another organization. Mm-hmm. And that was about 3 or 4 years ago, and we've been a partnered organization with them. And then one thing led to the other. And here I am now as the new CEO coming in for Heroes Foundation. Well, in already, because it's been a month into the role already.
So you all had elections, you're chosen?
Yes, okay. It's an interview process. Mm-hmm. So you have to be interviewed to then become the CEO of the organization. It is one of the largest youth development organization, NGO in Trinidad and Tobago. Mm-hmm. It's a full interview process to come into the role, and yeah, the work that we do is quite substantial across the board and across the entirety of Trinidad and Tobago.
How has the foundation played a part within the infrastructure of youth? Because there have been so many stories of the youth going in the wrong direction as compared to, let's say, a year, 2 years ago. What has the atmosphere or the vision for the foundation been like, or how much has it changed since?
No, so I think the vision remains very much the same: to create 21st century leaders, future-focused, solution-based young leaders. And that has been the goal since the beginning, and it continues to be the goal now. We work primarily through the school system, so we operate and function within schools across the school system with a program called the Heroes Development Program, basically teaching children how to become leaders in their own space, how to understand the role of leadership in its entirety, and teaching them soft skills as well inside there that are essential for the workplace. So that learning is something that they get the opportunity to go through over a 3-year period. Mm-hmm. Within the school system itself. And at the end of that, they come out being stronger leaders. We've had some really excellent cases. We've assisted over 7,000 youth since the first iteration of this particular program. And we continue to work. That's 7,000 directly. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of indirect kids that we've helped, probably over 100,000 over the years and through the years as well. Through different seminars that we've had, different projects that we've had massive Heroes Connect and Heroes conventions and so forth throughout the entirety of the life of Heroes, which, by the way, will be celebrating 25 years. Mm-hmm. Next year.
Now, I just wanted to understand the process of how do you select the schools or organizations or areas that you develop or go into, facilitate that training, and so in some cases even awareness that these opportunities exist for young people. How do you go about that process?
So normally it has to be a process where the school's administration is willing to work with the Heroes Foundation as well. So they actually come forth first and ask, and we have a massive ask. I mean, the amount of schools that we have is crazy. The amount of schools that we have who are coming to ask us to take on their school with this project, because they're hearing about the results, they're seeing the results from the projects that we're executing as well. So we have a massively long list. Unfortunately, we are only able to take on 5 at right now. Mm-hmm. Because of funding constraints, of course. So we work primarily in Southeast Port of Spain, St. Francis Boys, Chaguanas West, Marabella Secondary, and Separia Secondary as well.
Is there a main focus for the categories, meaning is more work focused or centered on young boys as it is opposed to girls, or is it like across the board?
No, it's across the board. So the program is open to everybody.
Nowadays that the young men seem to be more going astray than the young ladies, but sometimes I think it's the opposite, because there are a lot of young ladies who are a little more prone to get into trouble than the young guys. What do you all think?
No, so, I mean, every situation is different. Every area is different as well, in terms of where you're going to and the realities of those particular spaces. For us, I think right now there's a deficit across the board when it comes to youth in mm-hmm. terms of the skill sets that they're learning, in terms of what's happening with them, what's going on with them. So far, we've seen unprecedented levels of anxiety amongst young people. I mean, the mental health challenges that are popping up as well, that mm-hmm. compounded by the crime that is surrounding them and the communities that are surrounding them, and the reality of just everything that's going on mm-hmm. is creating a sort of young person that's coming out, and they're coming out a lot more aggressive because they're in that fight or flight mode constantly. Their nervous systems are not regulated. It's unregulated nervous systems. So you find that they're constantly they're trying to fight off something mm-hmm. or trying to flee from something. And it's a very dangerous place for young people to be. They definitely need more support systems, and they're not enough in place. And that's why we at the Heroes Foundation, we've been trying to see how best we can expand our programming to reach more young people. We might not be able to execute the full 3-year program, because when I tell you 3 years, we're in the school with them. Mm-hmm. We have about four hours contact with them per week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we run that program. So we grow with them through Form 1, Form 2, Form 3. But we're looking at probably doing a shorter version of that, a bite-sized version of that, where it might be like 3 months and we go into a school and we execute a shorter or more condensed version of it, while keeping our long-formed programming in select schools where we have the administration supporting us.
Now, with the developments in technology and the society on a whole, when I was growing up, it was a whole lot different. I'm sure when you were growing up, with all the additional gadgets and exposure to information, comparison is a very big thing that determines how people or young people feel about themselves. Is the foundation directing their guidance to developing self-esteem, to establishing that, you know, the what you see on social media is not necessarily what you go for, or which is even real? So what does that look like in the developing world?
It's resilience. So we've seen a lack of resilience amongst young people. That's the major issue. So a mm-hmm. lot of people don't realize that, because there are excuses being made for almost everything, but what it really boils down to is a lack of resilience, the lack of the ability to recover from what you're going through. Mm-hmm. And that is not necessarily just their fault. That is the fault of everybody's, a combined, everybody has to take a collective responsibility for what we're seeing right now with young people. But that lack of resilience is dangerous, because it means that you're developing a leadership that does not know how to, or a future leadership that does not know how to operate within society, how to regulate themselves within society. So that, I wouldn't say that it just comes down to comparison, but it comes down to when they compare themselves. So they watch something on social media and they say, oh, I don't have this, or mm-hmm. I want this, etc., all of that. Is there a sort of mindset where they can say, oh, I don't have this, but I can work towards building towards getting this? Like, you know, this is something that this person earned, or this person got through some level of hard work, etc. And therefore, if I build my personal resiliency to overcome obstacles in my life, etc., I could also build towards this.
So you all have been looking at these things and developing programs. How do persons get involved in the Heroes Foundation to be mentors and to be, I guess I would use the word experts, in how the information that you want to pass on to the young people?
Yeah, so you can look us up at theheroesfoundation.com, theheroesfoundation.com, and there we have volunteer links and everything online, so somebody who's willing or who has an interest in volunteering, they can definitely reach out through that platform, because we have a very strict assessment process as well. approval and scrutinizing process. We just want to make sure that the people who are coming in are child protection trained, for example, they understand the vulnerabilities of the populations that they'll be dealing with as well. So we take very careful care when it comes to that. Our organization is held to an international standard and operates at an international standard when it comes to that. We're trusted by many international agencies, and a lot of our programming that we execute, we do in partnership with a lot of international agencies as well, UNICEF being one of our biggest partners out there.
Because they do have mandates to deliver not only healthcare, but mental awareness, self-esteem training, and so on to young people. Because at the end of the day, they are the people that would be taking over these spaces in terms of country and development. So it will be a good idea to focus on that. Vision for the Heroes Foundation moving forward with your tenure as CEO, what do you have in store for them?
So our idea is just to expand into as many schools as possible right now. We've been reaching out to as many different partners to get on board to support us. And we've gotten a really good response. I mean, the partners that we have on board so far, just a big thank you to all of them. Scotiabank, Republic Bank, Ant Macau, you know, all these agencies who are on board with us, who are supporting the Heroes Foundation, and the Office of the Prime Minister as well. We're very, very grateful for them on board. And that gives us the opportunity to now push forward in a big way, to look to expand even further out, to bring on more private sector engagement, government engagement as well, to see how we can get this program into as many schools as possible. Because I'm telling you, the way in which this program operates and functions, it is changing lives, and we're seeing it in real time. It is changing lives in a massive way. Kids who thought, hey, you know, I don't need to take on CXC, I don't need to take on exams, I don't need any of that, and had an attitude towards exams like, nah, don't worry about that, have changed their whole perspective in terms of how they now apply themselves, you know, how they then approach the exams. And that is a big thing, a big plus. They're now seeing themselves as possibly being, being able to not just limit their thinking to just being something here in Trinidad and Tobago, but also being able to operate internationally. You know, things that a lot of the high-performing schools, and I put that in inverted commas, because world schools right now suffering across the board. But things that high-performing schools would normally have access to. So you would always have, if an ambassador going to visit a school, for example, they normally visit the high-performing schools. You know, anybody coming down to give a talk, their alumni associations are really strong. I mean, when you look at the colleges and the convents, etc., they normally have strong support networks and systems. What we are working in is the most vulnerable schools, and we are trying to connect those same systems into those schools. So you might bring an ambassador to come and speak at one of those vulnerable schools as well. And it makes a big difference. It makes a big, big difference, because they feel so neglected.
It's almost like, oh, we're shiny, you know, that interest, and they get to hear about other aspects of life that you may not, as you said, been exposed to because of unfortunate, you know, depictions of the school and so on.
I mean, I know some schools where the only person of influence or seniority in society who's come and spoken to them is a police officer. And they didn't come to talk to them about the joys of being a police officer. They came to talk to them about what not to do to get arrested, you know. And that kind of does something to your psyche as well. No offense to any of the police officers out there, of course. Big up the police officers who are doing good work, who are inspiring young people out there. I have big admiration for them. But I mean, when that is your only reality that you're coming into contact with, where is an officer coming in and saying, this is what you'll get arrested for, this is what you're already training the mindset into thinking, oh, I'm a criminal, you know. I'm clearly that's what people perceive me as, and therefore they start to operate and function like that. So changing the mindsets around those things means connecting them to other opportunities that they might not have otherwise had.
I'm glad that you brought up that piece, sir, because the frequency and the words spoken when trying to uplift a child to see possibilities, as you said, you don't want to hear about the doom and gloom and so on. You want to hear about, okay, how did you become an ambassador? Or how did you become someone who travels the world and represents Trinidad and Tobago in whatever field it is? When you talk about steps and goals, it inspires the child to think, you know, beyond what they see. So Are you all going to be doing more of those types of interviews? And for those who are listening and would like to be part of that, as I said, you can log on to the Heroes Foundation. In not so much to have lectures, but to also give time, volunteer. Do you all do that as well?
Yes, I mean, we've had several systems in the past. The Big Brothers Big Sisters program was one of those programs that we ran in the past that did that, that allowed a mentor to be connected to somebody in one of our school community who operates with us. There is, of course, with COVID and everything, that program sort of suffered a bit. And there's a hope to bring it back in a different sort of way and a different sort of style as well. But I think that's so important. I think what we are seeing right now is a lack of mentors and mentorship amongst young people, and that is what is causing a lot of what we're seeing with them online and how they operate, how they function. Because we don't underestimate the power of a mentor. You know, when we were growing up, we had all sorts of people in our neighborhood or around us who would support us, who would be mentors to us. You'd have a good teacher who would be very invested in your future and what you do. You'll have somebody who might be a coach somebody who supported you around the space, or a family member. All those people are very important, and having multiple mentors like that in different ways also helps you to grow and helps you to become something greater. I always go back to the old adage, it takes a village to raise a child, and that's so important, remembering that and trying to return to that. And we've seen some iteration of that coming back out, because everybody talking about community, how to find your community, how to build your community, etc. But we know that as Caribbean people. We have that ingrained in us. We just need to go back to that old adage. It's your village. You have to find your village. You know, that's the word that we should be using. We need to look for our village.
Some of them is used with tribe. Same connotation, same idea of coming together.
Yes.
As they say, they take a village to raise a child. The next question I wanted to ask you, how do you involve parents in the program? Because dealing with the kids is one part, but to have continuity, parents must get involved. How do you do that?
Correct. So there's a three-part solution to what we're seeing right now in our society with regards to education, the education system, and schools. The first is the kids, of course, and the work that you need to do with them. The second part is teachers as well. You also need to train teachers and ensure that they are receiving certain levels of training and upgrading. And then parents, I agree with you. So we work with different agencies. FPA is one of those agencies that we work with to try and send out parenting sessions and to train parents in just parenting 101. We take for granted that a lot of parents, especially young parents, you know what, I say young parents, but really older parents as well, people who've been parents for years, we take for granted that they know how to parent. But some of the things that they've done, they did the best that they could with the resources that they had and with what they knew at the time and fitting for that particular era. But now in this 2026, is a completely different ball game. So parents are not equipped with the necessary skills and a lot of the times to be able to deal with the realities that we're seeing right now. So for example, all these things with the internet and social media, and that's a whole different parenting game. So the game has completely changed, and therefore we see that as being important to also train parents and to give them parenting 101 skills.
Yeah. Because even the term parent is still a general term, or has become a general term, because you have grandparents who are parents, aunties, you know, probably a family member, a family relative, friend. So many different definitions of what family units look like now that we have to step into how to address each one.
Correct.
And how to adapt, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, parent guardian, you need... And as much training as possible needs to be sent out there for parents, and they want it, they ask for it. We here in Trinidad and Tobago, I don't know if we've been answering that call appropriately. There needs to be more ways to reach parents, and somebody will tell me, oh, well, we have this parenting program over here, and we have this parenting program, and all of them are like in person. what parents, the time, if you're working, you know, constantly, some parents working on weekends as well, the weekend straight throughout, where are they going to find the time to attend an in-person program? And the next thing is, you have a lot of parents who travel. So you're thinking about, you know, it's the cost of travel from, if you
point
live
point A to point
correct,
B, yeah.
You live it in Chaguanas and you had to come into Port of Spain for a parenting session. That is very expensive, you
do
know.
You when you're speaking there, the word mandatory popped into my head, because in some cases it may be mandatory for them to have the session. You know, how do you adapt, as you said, to the restraints that parents have? The other part of it as well is actually getting them all together at the same time, as I said, making arrangements for that. Now, going beyond that, you've brought in the children, dealt with their issues and trying to get programs centered around them. You have the parents as well. Do you include teachers in that space, as in to how to not only make them aware of what the children need, but also to give them the training to give them those requirements? How does that go?
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of the last few years actually doing trainings in trauma-informed facilitation for teachers, just how to deal with a child who might be a difficult situation in the classroom, or who might be hard to deal with in the classroom, or how to see beyond just the behavior, but to see behavior as more... Not to move into behavior management, but rather to move into behavior understanding, right? And what does that mean? So what does the behavior tell us about this child beyond just what we're seeing here in this moment? And just looking at that and exploring that as well. Of course, that is so important. We need to train teachers more and more and more along these lines, because there's a different set and a different cohort of students that are coming in. I recently trained on Friday, actually. I trained some teachers at St. Mary's College. And one of the teachers came up to me and said that 10 years ago, the students were so different to the students that you have now. And it's so true. But we haven't been keeping pace with regards to research and data collection to understand how to deal with this new set and this new cohort of children that are coming in. And the new 2026 child. So you have teachers now.
What is Gen Alpha?
Gen Alpha, yeah. You have teachers who are using techniques that they used 20 years ago and still trying to use those techniques now. It worked excellently 20 years ago, but right now it requires a different type of skill set and it's a completely different ball game. You know, we see it, it's just natural progression, and anything that you see is a natural progression, because even in sport, the way that we played, for example, football, the way that football was played 20 years ago is not the same way that
definitely
football
is played
now.
With all of these water breaks. Interrupting the whole flow of the game.
I'd want to get into that.
Listen, my team won, just by the way, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
The way that TKR played a couple years ago is
it's not what TKR is doing right now. It applies all across the board. Now, in that vein and understanding... that even, as I said, sports is changing, the way that we do business is changing. Obviously, the way that we educate our children has to be paid attention to as well. The goals for Heroes Foundation, the Heroes Foundation for 2026 into 2027, what would be, or in your opinion, be the highlights of that reel or that year?
Yeah, I think for us, a big one is to continue again the HTP programming, shifting this into bite-sized modules as well that we could spread to as many schools as possible. Our hope is to raise the HTP programming to at least, or to get into at least 15 schools with the HTP programming, and then to be able to hit as many kids as possible, not necessarily in this school, but also outside the school with different conventions, different sessions. We have something that we're looking at where we want to bring kids together for a day of leadership training, you know. And we work very closely with a lot of the other NGOs in Trinidad, because I think one of the most dangerous things that we can do is work in isolation. There are many other NGOs doing phenomenal work, and we have very close relationships with them. We're happy that we have those close relationships as well. So being able to work with them, to support them, and they come and support us, we work really well, really, really well with them, and that helps us to reach an even greater catchment. So for us, as expansion of that particular programming, looking at introducing programming to help with parenting and teachers as well, to strengthen those, and hopefully also looking at expansion beyond Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm-hmm. And I guess networking with beyond Trinidad and Tobago as well, because yes. school here in Trinidad as opposed to school in Jamaica is correct. Totally...
completely different.
Have you all ever thought about exchange students?
It's a little bit tough and difficult with one if they're under 18. Mm-hmm. Over 18 is much easier to do an exchange program with, etc. But it's something that we can think about. It's something as that might be, I think, would be very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. You know, learn about some cultures.
Yeah. And it teaches a lot in between there as well. And that really helps us to lean more into what CARICOM really is, yeah, the Caribbean community. So if you start building from there, those exchanges, it's excellent. I remember going and doing a leadership program or leadership session in a session in Jamaica some years ago as well. And, you know, the kids were, it was from in a rural area in Jamaica, and those kids, they were very happy, just so happy to see anybody outside coming in to just talk to the school, because they were so unaccustomed to that there, that it was just a big surprise and a lot of excitement. So I know that there's a need, and we just did some soft skills training with them when we went across, and there's a big need and a big want for that across the board, across the Caribbean community.
Expand the mind.
Okay.
Mr. Ryan, thank you so much for coming in today. And here's much success in your new role as the CEO of the Heroes Foundation. And of course, you can come back to Freedom 106.5 FM anytime, whenever you need our assistance. Yes?
Thank you so much.
All right.
Happy to be here.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.